Eagles to another edition of Trad Cat Night. Special guests, a video interview right here on the TradCatNight.org website. Folks, date is November 12th, 2022. I hope you all are having a very wonderful and blessed day. As always, we continue to keep the programming moving along here at Trad Cat Night. First, I want to thank everyone who reached out on a daily basis, whether it was via text, email, whatever means of communication on social media. Yeah, it's been really rough. I had a real rough patch in my syndrome, and then on top of that, like, I don't know if I contracted something else. I don't know. No, I don't really think so, because no one around me that was helping to take care of me really got sick, so I don't think it was, like, COVID or anything like that, but I don't know. Didn't go see a doctor, so we'll never know. But in any case, thank you for that, but we're back today, right? And we're going to be having Anthony West on the program in a little bit. Dr. Paul Cottrell obviously joining us right now. We're going to do an extended program, so hopefully we're going to get back on track. I didn't even mention this to Paul, but the last week, man, it was so bad. I think the average amount of sleep for the week was like 2 hours. There was 2 days I didn't sleep at all, like literally just straight through. Last night I finally slept about 6.5 hours, which is still not great, but hopefully if I can continue to sleep, I can continue to wake up and do these shows and have some energy. But listen, Paul's going to be talking based upon some of our previous talks, some information that he wants to rehash, if you will, in terms of cancers being on the rise. I know I've covered some of these reports in times past where you have the ACS talking about how the cancer cases are going to be up on the rise, and I indicated at least in part it would be due to the vaccine, but Paul's got some explanations from some previous research that he's done. So he wants to talk about that. He wants to talk about the new COVID vax, why it's not working with some of these, the previous strains, if you will. And I don't know. I got some other stuff scribbled down. It's going to be an extended show, so we'll see what we get into today. But before we hand it over to Paul, just a gentle reminder, folks, gift subscriptions are available to Trad Cat Night. Follow me on social media, TikTok, Instagram, Telegram. If you want to join the sponsorship team, please reach out to me. Again, appreciate all of our sponsors. This is another way where you can help me, I can help you type of situation. But you got Kathleen Loney, and she is working on the candles, 100% beeswax candles. You can pre-order right now, $12 for a set that will go out to Father Void to be blessed, and then it'll be shipped to you. You can contact her at KathleenLLoney@gmail.com. We did a show a week ago. It was one of the few shows that I did over the last few weeks. But you can go back and listen to that show too as well. You got Samantha Wiesing, doTERRA essential oils. She's reminding everyone, 2 drops of lemon, 2 drops of lavender, 2 drops of peppermint, and a shot glass every hour, and help to reduce inflammation and kill bacteria in the nose and throat. And listen, you can contact her for the full product line of her great essential oils, samantha.wiesing@gmail.com. Chris Gagne, inviting all Catholics and those like-minded, please remember that. Remember the holy souls of purgatory. Chris, thank you for all that you are doing. Hopefully everything's A-okay up there in the Minnesota area. And let's get caught up here soon one of these days. Joe Blazak at 247rosary.com, playing a traditional rosary every half hour, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Got a Wednesday night special you can get signed up for at pray@247rosary.com. And last but not least, our first ever sponsor, johnteachjacksberry.com. First ever sponsor, as I mentioned. John, thanks so much for all that you're doing. And that's a prolific Catholic outlet loaded full of saint quotes, prayers, and so much more. And what else we got going on? Consultation-wise, 3 to 10 p.m. Eastern. I'm normally free every day if you're interested in that. Don't forget about the Substack channel. It's a different sort of supplementary page. We're going to have some new interviews on, hopefully here shortly. I'll probably be doing a video, a little video interview or a video show. I've got some ideas in mind for that one, geared towards end-time prophecy. And then what else? Live call and radio show. Not going to happen tomorrow again. I got to be a little bit more prudent. I really want to get to 100%. But I'm really hoping for the following week we will do it. And I don't know. Maybe we can, one of these days, maybe Paul wants to join us for one of those live call and radio shows. We'll get him back on. But to be announced in terms of who we'll bring on 2 weeks from tomorrow. And I think that's about it on the page. But yeah, Paul, where would you like to begin today? Thank you so much for joining us, as always, and always learn something new, at least something new every time we bring you on the show. But where do you want to start today?
Well, thank you for having me on your show, and hopefully you get better. I would like to start with a lot of covers that I've been doing this week. All right, it's tied to cancer and how it relates to SARS-CoV-2 and the vaccine. So I want to get it into people's heads that if people didn't take the vaccine, it doesn't matter, because there's going to be an awful lot of people out there that are going to get the virus eventually, because it's out there, it's ubiquitous. So this what I'm going to be talking about is going to be focused on individuals that either contracted SARS-CoV-2, only had the vaccines, or both. All right, this is going to be happening to a lot of people. All right, so a little bit of a background story. Last year, there was a published paper that came out, I believe it was May of 2021. I covered it with another paper that was dealing with how the spike can cause inflammation and shut down the repair mechanisms within the nucleus and potentially lead to cancers. And this is part of the subset of what I call AIDS-like syndrome. And then there was another paper last year, that was showing that SARS-CoV-2 genome, pieces of it, can be integrated into the human genome. And how it works is using something called line 1. Line 1 is a transposon and a reverse transcription factor that is endogenous to our body. All right. Most retroviruses will have their own reverse transcription and then get into it, into our genome that way. But we have this capability endogenously in our cells. Now, with that paper showing that SARS-CoV-2 can get integrated into the genome, coupled with a new paper that came out this year that Dr. McAuliffe reviewed on a show, he discussed it on a show, it was kind of like The View, but it wasn't The View, but it was a bunch of women talking. I don't remember what the name of it is, but it's like a morning show.
Not Dr. Oz? Wasn't Dr. Oz?
Well, it wasn't Dr. Oz, but the thing is it was like four women at the table, and they had Dr. Gold there, McAuliffe, and I think his name is Barrett. But three doctors, okay. So Dr. McAuliffe is talking about this paper that came out in February. It was published in February online of this year. And it was showing that human line 1 is activated for vaccines for SARS-CoV-2 if you received a messenger RNA virus from BioNTech. It was specific to BioNTech, this research. Okay, so... And so it was saying that human line 1's activated, and then when they checked, the reverse transcription code was there. Okay, so they proved that line 1 is activated, and the reinscription happened on the unique sequence that's in BioNTech. So when you couple the three papers that I'm talking about, the two that came from 2001, where spike protein can cause an inflammatory response and activate line 1 and help with shutting down repair mechanisms. Then the other one last year talking about how SARS-CoV-2 has been shown to integrate into the genome. All right. And then you couple that with this new paper that's showing that BioNTech vaccine was reverse transcribed by line 1. All right. But they didn't go to the next level to show that it actually integrated into the genome. But it doesn't take a big leap here because of the paper that was published last year to have the hypothesis now with substantial evidence to suggest that we are now seeing this integration taking place. And not only did the paper show that human line 1 was being activated and reverse transcription of BioNTech's vaccine was taking place, but it was also showing that the liver is a reservoir, because they were doing it with hepatocytes, so cells from the liver. Okay, well, why is the liver so important? Because it has CD147. CD147 is one of the receptors that I've been screaming to everybody about for 3 years that's just not ACE2. It's ACE2, CD147, CD209, CD299, and GRP78, and a bunch of others. What this means is that there's multiple areas that this thing can go to. And when it's mutating, different doctors are going to see this from their lens differently. If you go to a doctor and you at the beginning and everything's going to ACE2, most of the presentation's in the lung. But as it's mutating, it's starting to move more towards different tissues, like the colon, like the liver, like the spleen, like the brain. And those are all different doctors. See? So it flies underneath the radar. And as these things are bouncing around, what I call the pinballing, as it's mutating, and it loses affinity for one receptor, it's gaining affinity for another. This is the reason why vaccines are not working. There's multiple reasons, but one reason is this, is that there's a mutation, there are mutations that are taking place where affinity to one receptor is starting to stabilize and not improve, maybe even reduce, while affinity other receptors of this repertoire that I said is starting to increase. So when you step back and put it in the context of all the research that's out there, these three papers that I'm mentioning and what Dr. McAuliffe is saying is this is pointing to cancer, because once the genome of SARS-CoV-2 goes into our genome, either in a full cassette or in pieces, it'll cause disturbances within our chromosomes. In some areas, it'll be okay. But because it's not targeted, it's kind of just, it's like a cluster bomb, all right? It goes anywhere. You don't know where it's gonna go. So in some areas, it'll go into the genome where there's no coding. In other areas, it will go into a genome where there is coding, and they may either shut down a tumor suppressor gene or turn on an oncogene. So what you're going to start seeing is more incidences of cancer. Now, cancer at the cellular level can happen relatively rapidly. But for it to manifest clinically, where you start to show symptoms or show a large enough tumor to actually show up on a CT scan, may take 5 years. The wave that took place in 2020, 5 years out, that's 2025, for cancers to start showing, in most cases, having these cancers starting to be clinically relevant, all right? But at the molecular level, it's already happened. So there's going to be higher incidences of these cancers taking place from the first wave in 2005. Now, vaccines, the big push in vaccines was late, my memory serves me, it was late 2020, and the beginning of 2021. So that's going to be pushed out for those types of cancers starting at around 2026. Then you had the Omicron wave that happens, right, at the beginning of this year. You go out five, so that's 2007. So you're gonna start seeing incidences of cancer hitting at 2025, 2026, and 2027. And there's gonna be this. Yeah, go ahead.
No, while the thought hits me, because you know I'm kind of out of it here a little bit. When the thought hits me, I wanted to ask you. I have stepped back and thought about this, because I know we've talked about this in shows past when I've come on your show. I'm one of the few Catholics out there that really thinks that the Antichrist is right around the corner, and he's going to be the Mother Teresa on every level, right? Going to feed you, clothe you, after the collapse, obviously get everyone on the CBD system. But there is that health side to it. And on his page, he even talks about a new technology of light, which will revolutionize like the health industry, the health sector or whatever. But I sat back and I thought about this. I think it was the COVID vaccine program was planned to fail from the beginning to get people in uproar. You know, you didn't study this enough. We're going to have more cancers. And then when this guy shows up, He's going, and I've seen articles I've had it sent to me by one of my followers, Justin Matter, that they're working on a superhero vaccine, which will eliminate all cancers, all tumors, diabetes. They're like taking it from the cells of like highly trained athletes, and you would know more than I would. But my point is, when he comes out and he does have like this vaccine and it really does work, he's going to be seen as the superhero on the health level, if that makes sense. So I just argued, I think that this was planned to fail from the beginning, I think.
It might have been. You know, I'm trying to just work with the data that I can point to. But if I go into the realm of speculation instead of just hypothesis-driven based on data sets, I think that there is a story that's starting to evolve where they want to weaken your immune system. So that's that AIDS-like syndrome, and you're going to start hearing about a lot of like AIDS type of medication, right? And you're going to see this big push, and Moonshot, the book Moonshot from the Pfizer CEO, has already stated that this technology that they're using for the vaccine is going to be the technology used for precision therapy for cancer. So he wrote a book on exactly what you're saying. So it's not too far out of the realm of possibility that AIDS-like syndrome and cancers are actually part of the playbook of this whole crisis. Because, you know, SARS-CoV-2 or COVID crisis is not just in one event. It's an era. You know, there's a pre-COVID, there's a COVID era, and there's going to be a post-COVID era. And then I call it another post-post-COVID era. But this COVID era is starting to sunset, and we're moving into the post-COVID era where you're starting to see all these weird things happening, like AIDS-like syndrome, and long COVID, and, you know, cancers that start to pop up much earlier than normal. So, like, for example, if you go into, you know, the human body and you look at something, an area that has high division rates normally, right? There's high mitotic rates, like the liver because it regenerates, like the bone marrow because it's creating blood, right? This is where, you know, or the colon, you know, areas that regenerate a lot, right? These are areas that will be targeted through this integration to cause disruption in the chromosome. It causes this instability, and then it's on the path to cancer. So ones that don't know, most cancers in the human body need about 5 different knockouts before full-blown cancer happens. 5 things have to happen to go wrong, all right? But how this thing works is that As a cell mutates, let's say, for example, a type of colon cancer, if a cell mutates and knocks out APC, it's a type of pathway that shuts down overgrowth. But if that's shut down, all right, APC shut down, and those cells can evade apoptosis, then what's going to happen is it will lead to mutations in KRAS, and that will start to build up the polyp. And then as that polyp is starting to grow, those cells will start, they're not apoptosing, they'll start to continue with fragmentation and shutting down of certain things in the genome. It's breaking down. The genome is slowly breaking down, turning off and mutating, right? And then eventually other pathways are going to be shut down all the way to the point where your tumor suppressor P53 doesn't work anymore and you get full-blown carcinomas. So the point I'm making is that this is why it takes years to see it at the clinical level, but it can be relatively quickly at the cellular level.
I found that article because I wanted to get a timeline frame. It's here, the superhero vaccine will give body-wide genetic upgrade. Groundbreaking superhero vaccine based upon the DNA code of Olympic athletes could transform society well within a decade, a top genetic scientist has claimed. The jab would provide lifelong protection against some of the top leading causes of death, including, well, I mentioned a few other ones, but against heart disease, stroke, Alzheimer's even, as well as liver disease. And it says it will deliver the blueprint of ideal cells from men and women whose genes are more disease resistant than the average person. And the timeline on this is the clinical trials are saying are expected to begin in 2026, which is interesting because you throw out 2025, right? When it would probably come more to the surface when, you know, be more readily known that people are getting cancers. And they said that this could be available within the next decade. So let's just say, I don't know, maybe like the 7 to 10 year range or something like that. So I find that interesting, that, you know, your timeline kind of.
Right. You know, it's not necessary. You know, there's a couple fallacies with the idea, but the main thrust of the idea, I think they're pushing. One problem is the assumption that an athlete is healthier than a little Japanese woman that's lived to 120. So the little Japanese woman that's lived to 120 that, you know, only, did pearl diving when she was a kid, and just walks around and, you know, buys groceries, she may be more fit in what we define as fit, you know, at a genomic level, than let's say an athlete. So that's the only part that I see is kind of like, well, you know, there is a fallacy to assume that an athlete is the best.
Right.
It may not be the best. But in some cases, in some genes, in, you know, probably when it comes to oxygen delivery, muscle mass, recovery, lactose production, not lactose production, lactic acid production. If you could slow that all down, you know, and have better recovery, and some of these athletes do have that capability. Like Lance Armstrong, for example, you know, even though he was doping during the Tour de France, he had a larger lung capacity than the average athlete. Just physiologically, he had a larger lung capacity. So people like that, you know, have genes that people can, you know, in theory, take out and potentially, you know, harness and put it into other people. So I think what's going to happen is there's going to be a flare up of cases of HIV like syndrome, and there's going to be drugs that are going to be coming out and vaccines coming out for HIV in the near future. And I think that you're going to see a plethora of biotech companies that are going to be pushing precision therapy for these cancers that are going to be popping up that I'm talking about.
Let me ask you, because I don't think we've ever covered this in times past. I know I've done shows with Aaron Elizabeth and some other doctors, where we, but I don't think you and I ever discussed this. Again, let's fly with my crazy theory that the Antichrist guy is seen as the, you know, the good guy, save the day, or save everyone from cancer, kind of all that stuff. All these holistic doctors have been dying, right? They've all been Epstein, you know, 50 or 60 of them, I don't know what the count is now, who apparently have had, like, natural means of curing cancer, and they're just gone. Again, you can't have that out there if you're going to try to stage the world for this one character that's got to be seen as a good guy. I mean, give us your thoughts on that. I mean, can you reverse cancer, like, through diet? Like, someone like Dr. Lorraine Day said she had stage 4 cancer, and she said she reversed it through diet. She used to do my show, but you want to handle that question? Because I kind of think that...
You know, there's a history here. Before allopathic medicine, before, let's say, Rockefeller started, you know, pushing what we call medical school, you know, there were individuals out there that were in this natural path, homeopathic medicine that had, I wouldn't say cures, but treatments for certain diseases, okay? Then they were pushed out, and the medical world started to grow. Well, you know, this is the MD world, right? And it was more big pharma, you know, the pharmaceuticals. And for many, many decades, the thought was disease, give a pharmaceutical, if not, treat with surgery, all right? But there's a new crop of students that are being trained in medical school. where they call it CAM, which is complementary alternative medicine. All right. So what this basically means is that there is something to be said about proper nutrition, certain natural ingredients that people can take that could help with disease or prevent disease. And you couple that with the allopathic knowledge that we have with pharmaceuticals. So the idea here is that in the new age of medicine, this is the age that I'm being minted in as an MD, the idea is try to stay away from pharmaceuticals for as long as possible and do proper diet, exercise, and supplementation. When a disease starts to happen, if it can be ameliorated with natural means, essential oils or whatever, right? Some natural mean, then try that, but try that early. Because what happens is the disease will progress to a point where you need something much, much more potent. And I think what will happen is that as we transition more and closer, for this particular person, that their disease state is starting to progress and that the natural means didn't work, and you start moving more towards the pharmaceutical means, there are going to be side effects to the pharmaceutical means, especially for cancer treatment, right? So coupling it with the natural way to kind of help cushion the blow of chemotherapy in the case of cancer is starting to be the thought process. I don't subscribe to the idea that if you have cancer, only look at natural means. I don't subscribe to the idea of only going allopathic either. So I think there's a middle ground. And I think the problem is that you have the old school MD types that aren't willing to appreciate the gains that have been made in the natural realm and how to ameliorate disease. It's not a cure, but how to ameliorate disease. And the naturopath types keep on saying that all the allopathic doctors don't know what they're talking about. And the thing is, it's a middle ground. This is why we're being told CAM, this CAM process, where you have to integrate the two together, and then you're going to reach the proper solution. So, that's where I'm at. And that's I am a product of my environment, right? So I'm a product of this new kind of concept in medical school, where it's this idea of complementary medicine when data has proven that's the right way to go.
Yeah, that's what's crazy. I mean, we're living in an hour where probably, maybe within a decade that there could be just a one cure-all shot for this stuff, diabetes, for cancer. I mean, and again, imagine if a person could be seen as, the savior of humanity on that level. So I'm right there with you. The American Cancer Society at the beginning of the year indicated, it went out a year, 2 and 3 years, and it's gone up a half a million, million, 2 million. Like, they're already prognosticating millions of more cases, 3 years, 5 years. So I'm like, oh man, here we go.
Yeah, right. And the cover story is that for that first 6 months to 8 months, people weren't screening. So if you look at the research that's being published, they're saying cancer incidences are going up because screening went down for 8 months in 2020. All right. The reality of the situation is then it would drop back down after 2020, but it's still climbing. So it's not screening is only part of the small story. It's a very small part of it. The larger part of the story is that the virus and the vaccines are causing cancer. I can't be more clear on this. They are causing cancer at the cellular level. It's going to take time to start seeing it really flare up on the CT scan. And it's like, for example, with colon cancer, ones that took SARS-CoV-2 or have SARS-CoV-2 vaccine or have contracted SARS-CoV-2 have a higher risk now to having certain genes knocked out, such as APC and KRAS for colon cancer. All right, we know that the reservoirs are in the liver, around the heart, and also in the colon. So these things, this is, if someone had a 0% chance of getting cancer because they have good genetics and are away from carcinogenics, all right, and we would put them in a category of zero chance of getting cancer, all right, in the prime of your life. Well, that risk factor now probably has gone up to 30% because SARS-CoV-2 and the vaccines are carcinogenic based on definition. They cause cancer. So so if someone was swimming around in a carcinogen pool and they had good genetics, they're probably going to get cancer in the prime of their life. So the risk factors have gone from zero to about 25% or 30%. Okay? For someone that has bad genes or is working in the plant for 20 years around carcinogens, their risk factors, let's say baseline, is anywhere from 30 to 60%. And then you add in getting SARS-CoV-2 and or the vaccine, and it's gone up. If their baseline was 60% because of their risk exposure, it's now 90%.
What about diet too?
Well, that's you know, especially with colon, you know, with colon cancer, you know, it's a, there is a correlation between people that lower incidences of colon cancer and people that have you know, veggies in their diet. You know, you don't have to be vegetarian, but you know more more greens, more greens in the diet, and less, you know, less red meat.
That's
having a good gut biome, a proper gut biome, will allow for homeostasis in that gut and reduce that inflammation. You'll have proper metabolism because you need that bacterium to metabolize, you know, chemicals. And there's a crosstalk between actually your gut and the microbes in the gut, and the crosstalk to the hepatic cells that are in your liver, and there's also crosstalk between the gut and the brain. So when someone says my gut feeling, that's an ancient truth. That ancient truth is that we have a neural network in our gut, all right, that is separate somewhat to the neural network that's in our brain. So we do have two brains. Now the brain that we have up here is much more complicated, much more complex, you know, and you know there's a lot more going on, right? But rudimentary, you know, right. You know, so if you look at evolution, you know, as we are moving through the evolutionary tree, we are worms, you know, because worms have a very, very simplistic neural system to allow for that peristaltic activity to move the worm, right? So the worm is basically the digestive system. That's all the worm is. But as we evolved, worms evolved. You know, we evolved from worms. Now, what's interesting from a biblical standpoint is that the phrase, you know, we are worms. And you've seen this. Maybe it's in Psalms, but Moses, I thought, said it. And you know, we are worms, and there's also a phrase where Moses states that we are lower than dust or lower than dirt. So this there's a hint of this, but if you look at the tree of life, we've evolved from lower species. One of those lower species are worms, and our digestive system is that imprinting, that hint of that evolutionary process is in our gut. So
now, Paul, too, I know you wanted to talk about this. I mean, cut you off on that. I want to squeeze in as many more topics as we can because we've got 25 more minutes. You wanted to talk about why this new COVID vaccine is not or what? Yeah, I don't know what word this. The new COVID vaccines. New COVID strains are coming out. Why aren't they being handled, or why is it the older vaccines, the vaccines that came out previous? Why is it not helping with these newer strains? And what are these newer strains? Because I've been out of the loop here for the last few weeks. Are they gaining momentum? Are they getting stronger? Worse symptoms? Are they still, weakening? What's going on with that?
Okay, so in terms of new variants or subvariants, Omicron is mutating. Cases are increasing in some areas of the country and in some areas of the world. If you step back and look at the big picture, the waves are getting less. So the waves of SARS-CoV-2, in terms of number of cases, there's a harmonic dissipation that's taking place. It's dissipating, okay? But waves up and then comes down. But it's a harmonic dissipation. So I'm not saying that there's gonna be this big surge of SARS-CoV-2 like we had in January of 2020 or in January 2022. I don't think that's gonna happen. But what's happening is that we have antibodies, either natural, through natural infection or through the vaccine, that's supposed to neutralize these viruses, these new mutations. But remember what I said earlier in the show, is that there are many different receptors that the spike protein is honing in on through mutation, okay? It's evolving. The virus is gonna continue. Even if we don't hear it in the news, all viruses out there mutate, right? But once in a while, they get a certain mutation and there's a spike of infectivity, all right? Now, because it's not just one receptor, see, most of the scientific community is just focused on the ACE2 receptor, and it's like the mutation of the ACE2, to the ACE2 receptor is evading some of these antibodies. So as the shape of that spike changes, the antibody doesn't hone in on it as well. It's weaker, all right? But what's really happening is that the spike is gaining, it's tracking to a new receptor. For example, let's say CD147, which is on these hepatocytes and on a bunch of, it's on macrophages and it's also on red blood cells. And I think this is part of the reason why the non-ARDS was happening. So the spike is mutating to other receptors. And these antibodies that we have are not neutralizing it. And in many cases, and Malone and I agree on this, in many cases it's probably enhancing it being brought into the cell, enhancing the infectivity. So this is antibody-dependent enhancement. But the reason why the vaccines aren't working on the new variants is that the mutations are taking place by the spike area on the virus and tracking to new receptors. It's gaining affinity to these receptors that I've been talking about for 3 years. It's not just ACE2. So as this hones and gets closer and closer to the other receptors, and it has, because at the very beginning, ACE2 receptor was the highest affinity, and it had low affinity to these others. But as we boxed in through antibodies, its ability to hone in on ACE2, it finds a back door to the other receptors, okay? And this is why we're gonna start seeing other clinical presentations of SARS-CoV-2 and long COVID, all right? It starts as a respiratory ACE2 primarily type infection, right? But it's tracking to other receptors over time. And so as this is happening, the vaccine that was focused on the S1 subunit, which is the binding domain to the ACE2, is becoming less and less relevant. on top of it. So as we keep on, there are researchers out there, and I'm falling in that category also. As we keep on giving more vaccines with a update of that S1 subunit based on whatever is prevalent out there, let's say BA5, okay? What's gonna happen is that it's just gonna pinball to another receptor, and you're never going to have herd immunity. This is a different, the concept that we had of herd immunity was like, if you had enough antibodies out there, you would be able to neutralize it, and even if people didn't have antibodies in the population, there's a herd immunity effect, and everything gets back to homeostasis and kind of calms down. But that was under the assumption that it was a one receptor. When you have multiple receptors, it never reaches herd immunity, ever, because it keeps on pinballing. It's as if, and one of the researchers in Europe that I did a Skype call just a couple days ago, he used the term, this spike, this virus, he meant the spike though, this virus is not from this world. That's how he phrased it, all right? And I'll tell you, it's not. It's not, it has the hallmarks of super engineering. It was designed to be like this, to where you can't catch it. It's like whack-a-mole. You know,
that's scary.
Yeah, no, it is. So you couple this, that you can't get herd immunity, it mutates, it may stay dormant for a little while, and then all of a sudden it flares up again, and then on top of it, when you do have it, you get it integrated into your genome and cause instability that leads to cancers. But the cancers are 5 years out for some people, maybe 10 years out for others, all right? So it's kind of like people are going to start forgetting about SARS-CoV-2. It'll be endemic. You'll hear, you know, different waves that are happening throughout all the way to 2025. And then all of a sudden you start hearing about cancers. And people will have lost memory of what happened in 2020 to be the event, the genomic event that led to this cancer that flared up in 2025.
When we talk about whatever pandemic at that time, yeah, because that would be the news.
Then on top of that, because of the weakened immune system, you're starting to hear in the news RSV, flu, and SARS-CoV-2 hitting children.
There's a lot of people sick. I was probably about to ask you, a lot of people sick? I mean, I had a few of my guests that were supposed to do shows with me, and they're like, yeah, I'm glad I'm not be able to do it today, and I'm sick myself. So, a lot of people here in Ohio. As a matter of fact, there was one show sent to me on BitChute. I don't know if it was... I don't think it was Simone, but it was someone else talking about how they thought it might have been like a chemtrail dump even out here in Ohio, spraying us with some stuff, because there's a lot of people getting some type of cold or...
Well, you know, what I think is happening is that, you know, there's a group of people out there that think that the virus is being dumped from a plane 50,000 feet up, all right? I think what is more plausible is that there are things that are happening in our environment that man is doing that is making our immune system weaker, so we're more susceptible to what viruses are out there in the environment. So they're dropping stuff, but it's not a virus from the sky. They're dropping particulates that inflame our tissues, and when you're inflamed and you come in contact with some sort of respiratory virus or even bacteria, you're more susceptible to getting the disease from that pathogen because they've already weakened your immune system. So this falls in line with, you know, maybe shutting down NF kappa beta from 5G. This may be, particulates, aluminum particulates, that they're dropping, you know, through what we would call chemtrails, but you know, they're doing things in the atmosphere that I think are leading
to,
they're contributing to an inflammatory effect on our body that leads to us contracting disease. But I don't think that they're dropping from 50,000 feet, you know, a SARS-CoV-2 virus. That I don't believe.
What about, you want to cover, you want to do a whole health show? Maybe we could spend another 15 minutes still talking about health. I mean, I had a few other areas. We could talk politics, geopolitics, economy,
just ask me a question.
All right, let's jump into it. What did you make of the midterms? I'm sure you've been talking about this with your folks, kind of give you your wrap up on everything that happened. We got Trump now waging war against DeSantis now, I guess, here a little bit. So what do you make of that? Where do we go from here?
Yeah, well, I was surprised. I fell in the camp that I thought there was going to be a red wave, and it didn't happen. The question is, did the red wave not happen because that the GOP didn't embrace Trump enough, or was it that certain candidates embraced Trump too much? Now, my brother lives in Michigan, all right? Michigan, I think, is an important data point to look at. A lot of people did not like the governor, all right? She's a Democrat. Whitmer, right?
Yeah.
She was the one that had that...
She's crazy one,
And she was going to be kidnapped and, you know, and all this stuff. You know, it was to the point where people didn't like her that they were going to kidnap her.
That was the FBI. They found the militia. They were like all FBI guys.
You know, so many people didn't like her. But who was running against her? A Republican. But she was very, pro-life and kind of evangelical, all right, from what I've heard. You know, I live in New York, so I didn't see the news on a daily basis of what was going on in Detroit area or in Michigan in general. But this is what my brother was saying. And what it was is that the districts that wanted to go red didn't go red because the Republican platform in Michigan was pushing too much of the pro-life agenda, and that it turned voters off, and they went and voted for her, voted for a Democrat. So, you know, I am for pro-life, right? But there's the difference between strategy and tactics, right? The strategy is have a state pass laws that are more to the side of pro-life, right? That's the strategy. The tactic is that shouldn't be your main focus to the voter. The main focus is, you know, constitutional freedoms, state rights, the economy. So I think that the way they spun this, that the Democrats, made it a one-issue type, you know, vote here, which was abortion versus non-abortion, I think in the end they won the day because of that. Now, how much of Trumpism hurt the vote or helped the vote, you know, it's mixed. In some contested areas, Trump helped. In others, it seems as though Trump hurt, like the whole Oz thing. Fetterman, I am shocked that Fetterman won.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But I'm also shocked that the governor from Michigan won. So there's a theme here. Now, immediately on election night, the Republicans are saying, okay, we're going to win the House. We're probably going to win the Senate. Right now, Republicans may not get the Senate back. But they'll control the House. Now, immediately it was McCarthy that said, okay, I'm going to be the leader, right? And then now there's this infighting with the Trump supporters and the non-Trump supporters. And it is interesting how it's playing out on the battlefield for Florida. because DeSantis was kind of a nobody, all right? He was kind of a nobody in 2018, right? And then all of a sudden, with that fall, and it's interesting, it's a fall of a building. All of a sudden, that remember that apartment structure that fell in I think this was 2021? Yeah, there was an apartment structure that fell in Miami, all right, and killed some people, all right? Okay. And then DeSantis was on the news all over the place. And at that moment in time, people were thinking that DeSantis was going to be challenging Trump for the re-election, all right? The thought was, well, what was it, the re-election challenge? Yeah, he was going to challenge him. And I remember Leo was thinking that the Republican Party was going to go more towards DeSantis, that he was going to gain momentum, you know, that there seemed to be more and more people that were going more towards DeSantis. And Leo was right about that. I kept on thinking that Trumpism was too powerful for DeSantis to pierce. But no, you're seeing it playing out. They're fighting each other. I mean, he's already threatening. Trump said that he was going to announce on Tuesday. All right?
Right, yeah, this Tuesday. Yeah.
This Tuesday. Now, think about how this is all going to play out. The Herschel Walker race in Georgia isn't going to be known until 4 weeks from now. All right, because that's a runoff. If he wins, I think how this is going to play out is that the Republicans get the Senate or it ties. I'm not sure, but I think that this is a key race. So lots of money is going to go into it. All right, Trump announces on Tuesday. That he's going to run for president, and how that race turns out. If Herschel wins, Trump wins and deflates DeSantis. If Herschel loses, the Republican Party are going to say, you lost that race for us, Trump. They're going to blame Trump for that. So it's a major bet. It's like a big casino bet. It's going to be interesting to see if Herschel can make it. I don't think Herschel is that bright. He does have
he's a name,
you know, but you know, the thing is that I think it's 50-50 if he gets it. I think it's 50-50. But the bigger play is that if Herschel loses, Trump is weakened in trying to sew up the GOP nomination.
I just don't see Trump stepping down regardless, really. I mean, he's got such a big ego, you know.
Yeah, but you know, here's the way this is going to play out. All right, we start going into primaries. Trump is, you know, being bombastic and, you know, and being Trump, right? DeSantis will probably be out of that pack that's going to be running the leader, right, against Trump. The question is, has Trumpism or the MAGA movement grown in power to be able to move the GOP's platform, or have they been weakened because of what happened with January 6th? It's still to be left, because Trump, because he's a Gemini, and it's interesting, John Hogue reads Trump the way he does. It's almost spot on. He's chaotic. You don't know what you're going to get. You know. Plus, he's like a little kid that needs attention. And you get whatever you want as long as you tell him he's such a great person. If you tell him that he's a great person and the smartest, you get anything you want. It's really easy. So if the Democrats were smart, which they're not, they would just say, Trump, we want you in office, you're a great person, and we need some, you know, help with, you know, this Social Security bill that we're pushing through or whatever, right? You know, but they don't do that. because they hate Orange Man so much. They don't realize that it's very easy to pass legislation if you just pretend. Exactly. That's how he works. So, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a lot of fireworks. I think the primaries are going to be a lot of fireworks. And I think that DeSantis is skull and bones. You look at his, if you go to Wikipedia and you read his credentials, you know, and his history, he looks tailored. He looks like a person that has been...
Like another John Kerry?
Even bigger. Because of all of that, he was the baseball player. So he's a combination of George Bush Sr. and Kerry. Merged.
Yeah, right? I can see that, yeah.
You know, and, he's the baseball player, came from Yale. You know, how Skull and Bones works is you don't know who's in it, right? It's very secretive. But it just seems as though at key moments in his life, he was helped. And because Trump is going against the establishment, the Bonesmen, It could be really, really supercharged.
Yeah.
There could be a lot of fireworks there.
I'm gonna do a little more research on this first. It makes sense to me, but I've never made that connection between Skull and Bones 322 and DeSantis. That'd be worthy.
Because about what Skull and Bones really is for. It's for the erosion of our constitutional freedoms and the integration of a new world order using carbon taxing as the money conduit. And that's why Kerry is pushing this green agenda. And he keeps on pushing the carbon tax. Because they know that the only way to truly establish a one world government, an uber government, is to have some sort of tax revenue. That starts it all in motion. And then once you've started it in motion, what are you going to do? You would have to build a military to fight that order. That was established. So they are hell-bent on getting that carbon taxing and then being able to issue bonds that are backed by the carbon tax, and that bond is issued by the uber government. And now you've established quite a one-world government. That's what this green agenda has nothing to do with temperature. It is all about getting tax revenue to build a one-world government. And Kerry is the poster child that's promoting this, traveling all over the world and spreading, his carbon all over the place. But Trump represents, from my interpretation of Trump, represents localization, not globalization. And that is antithetical to what Kerry's pushing. So the next skull and bone to try to promote this, I think, is DeSantis.
Interesting. Yeah. Let's see what happens. No doubt about it. Paul, we're just about out of time here. We got to give you some shameless self-promotion time. What can we help you promote this month, and where can we find you on social media?
Well, you can find me on YouTube. I have three channels on YouTube, on Rumble, BitChute, and Brighteon. You can also find me on Patreon. You can go to my store, the-studio-reykjavik.com, and I have a discount for your viewers. It's all caps TCK8. All caps TCK8. And that is $8 off of any order. And I have a new product out there. It's a 2 ounce C60 product. It's a 2 ounce. It's for $60. And what you would use that supplement for is to reduce ROS, bring down that our reactive oxygen species. It's a very strong antioxidant. So you take it once a day, underneath your tongue, swallow it, a dropper of it each day, and what will happen is you're reducing the reactive stress, this stress level on your cells, this oxygen stress that's on your cells. And you slow down these inflammatory responses. So, please go to my store, the-studio-reykjavik.com. The discount is TCK8, all caps, You get $8 off on any order.
Cool. Awesome. Oh, I appreciate that, Paul. Well, you heard it. Get your order in so you get your discount. And hey, we're back. Hopefully, we'll continue to resume shows. I'm going to get in touch here with Anthony Wester, scheduled to talk with him in just a moment. Paul, thanks so much for joining us. And folks, listen.